Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
But what about love letters? Author Thomas Mallon reminds us that couples have used the written word to express their feelings for centuries. In medieval times, there was the 12th century nun Eloise and her former teacher turned monk Peter Abelard. For Eloise, the letters themselves became a lover.
They have souls. They can speak. They have in them all that force which expresses the transports of the heart. They have all the fire of our passions. They can raise them as much as if the persons themselves were present.
Except when they don't. The feelings expressed in letters aren't always pretty. Here are the words of Harold Ross, editor of The New Yorker, to his missus.
We have different tastes, different interests, different instincts, different ideas. We are distinctly two entities, two personalities. We differ in almost everything. Living with you on the basis that I have in the past is, I have concluded, impossible.
Ouch. Thomas Mallon's book is Yours Ever, People and Their Letters, A History of Letter Writing. In honor of Valentine's Day, we bring you our conversation again.
The physicality of letters, I think, is very important, and they used to play a real role in courtships and romances. People would ask for them back if they broke up. They would tear them up, and that would give a certain kind of satisfaction. Or if everything went well, they would save them, and they would look at them, you know, years and years later. All of that has more or less gone away with email.
Well, we want to talk more about modern-day letter writing, but let's go way back to what you call the Western world's first famous pair of epistolary lovers. This is Eloise and her teacher, Peter Abelard, and it had a disastrous ending. Just remind us a little bit about their story.
Under the watchful eyes of her uncle, Fulbert, he unfortunately fell in love with her. Eloise and he had a child. They married in secret. They ran away. But in the end, this only exasperated or enraged Uncle Fulbert, who famously had Peter Abelard castrated, which fitted him for the monastic life. He also convinced Eloise to enter a nunnery. And so some of the correspondence they had about their love is really very retrospective.
Well, as she writes to him, in spite of all our misfortunes, you may be what you please in your letter. Another pair of lovers whose letters you analyze are Russian playwright Anton Chekhov and actress Olga Knipper. These letters were a way they could overcome their separation. She was an actress and on tour. Chekhov was by then ailing in Yalta?
Yes.
And you say she was the one in her letters who would want to, and now we switch to capital letters, talk about the relationship.
Chekhov and Olga, they're both very charming and they're both extremely neurotic. The correspondence is always kind of fraught, especially with Olga's need for reassurance. I describe her in the book as a virtuoso of the passive-aggressive. She says at one point, "You're sick of writing to me. You don't feel anything when you write to me. Isn't that right?" And so he has to deal with all this from afar, and he is kind of gentle and reassuring. "You're a goose, sweetheart. Never while I'm your husband will I take you away from the theater." Whatever her anxiety of the moment is, she sees it placated by him.
Yeah. Be careful of the love letters that have trapdoors in them, like that one. I want to talk about President Woodrow Wilson and his first girlfriend, but then wife, Edith Galt. He was a widower when they first met. He was absolutely besotted by her, to an extent that's kind of disturbing to read, given that there was a war going on.
Well, at one point, he begins to send her state papers across town. And, you know, we think of Wilson as this very skinny, I call him a skinny pillar of rectitude, with those glasses, the former professor. I mean, in some ways, the most intellectual of all of our presidents, I suppose, if you don't count Thomas Jefferson in that. And yet, to say the least, he was very, very highly sexed. And when he is getting to know Edith, he's in his late 50s, and he is so, as you say, besotted with her that he really begins to neglect his job for a while. And his White House aides and those around him are beginning to worry about this distraction, particularly in this period when the First World War has broken out in Europe and Wilson is struggling to keep the United States out of it.
What was really on his mind throughout these war summers, as you write, he writes to her, If ever again I have to be with you for an hour and a half, with only two stolen glances to express my all but irresistible desire to take you in my arms and smother you with kisses, I am sure I shall crack an artery.
Yes, I mean, if you were giving a history test to the average student of American history and, you know, you asked, identify the president who wrote this letter, I don't think Wilson would be the answer. I think you'd probably get a lot of wrong answers for maybe Bill Clinton. This is not really our picture of Wilson, but it was very much part of him, and it was all-consuming for him in 1915. And after a six-month courtship, they got married. And then the letters stopped. And that's one of the odd things about love letters is once the affair reaches a successful conclusion, once the lovers get over all of the obstacles that they've been talking about in the letters and they get together, they get married, they live together, the letters stop. And we don't get the rest of the story.
Well, I just want to touch on a couple of the love letter exchanges that you tell us about that really weren't all that lovely. Because one is shocking. We think of the love story of the Duke and Duchess of Windsor as being one of the most profound of, you know, the 20th century. The Duke, who would have been Edward VIII, decides to abdicate the throne rather than renounce the woman he loved, Wallis Simpson. It's a great story, but their letters, not so much.
Well, his side of the correspondence is just icky. It's full of baby talk and endearments, and he's kind of infantile and dependent. And, you know, the Brits were so horrified at the idea of the twice-divorced Mrs. Simpson, as she was always referred to in the press, might become their queen. But anybody who reads the letters from this remove, I think, really feels that she did England a favor by taking him off the throne. He was just a kind of royal twit, at least in the correspondence. And there are no grand Shakespearean pleasures to be had from reading it.
Yeah. And then there was William Wordsworth, who really wanted his wife to write him love letters when they were apart. And she tries so hard. But yeah. She's back home raising the kids and cooking. And, you know, it's you sort of get this feeling of, oh, God, you know, one more thing I have to do.
Yes, the correspondence between the Wordsworth, it's lovely, it's warm, but it's the correspondence of married love. And I think I say somewhere in the book that it's the flannel nightgown instead of the black negligee.
But you know what? There's something to be said for flannel nightgowns. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Where do you think we're headed with love letters? Are they already endangered? You know, we are in the I heart you generation. Are letters endangered?
Oh, sure. Yeah. They're really becoming a special occasion genre. I suspect, though, that the love letter will survive longer than other kinds of letters because there is a sense that if you're going to express passion to somebody, and private passion in particular, that an email is somehow a little unseemly, or a text or a tweet.
And I'm thinking when it comes to love letters, you can have your emailed love letters in a file, but it's just not the same as sort of wrapping them with a ribbon and tucking them in a drawer.
Yeah, the clutch of letters, the bundle of letters, you know, the drama of the handwriting. If you have letters from somebody you loved, even, say, love between a parent and a child, if you hang on to those letters, you see the parent age. You see the handwriting shrink. You see it get quavery. And there's a poignancy there that I don't really think you are going to have in the same way with electronic communication.